Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, please tell our listening audience why we're drinking water.
We are drinking water because it's already been a long week and it's actually Thursday, so it's still a school night. And we are trying to pull double duty this week by covering these movies, but also catching as many documentaries at the AFI Documentary Festival as we possibly can.
I'm drinking water because I am so tired. We stayed out so late last night at the opening night gala. They screened a documentary called Icarus, and they had a Q&A, and then they had an after party with an open bar, and we just kind of hung out at the museum. If you've never been to the museum in D.C., it's a fascinating museum. It's a wonderful place to hold a screening. Maybe some of the most uncomfortable seats in D.C., but we stayed there so late.
Yeah, so excuse us if we're a little draggy, but so are some of these movies. So
well,
you're
playing hooky. You shouldn't be here right
I
now.
Should not
you should be
here.
Downtown at the museum, in fact, watching these spotlight screenings for the documentary film festival. I have to be here. My wife's working late. So I have an excuse. What's your excuse?
My excuse is that I was so tired after two of the movies today. So I went to work, then watched two different documentaries. And after, in the middle of the second documentary, I was like, wow, I'm already exhausted. I'm not making it to the 8:45 p.m. screening of was like the Reagan story or something. And so while it looks really interesting, I'm going to have to wait and hope that we eventually get a link before the film comes out. So when we do these AFI docs, it just requires a whole lot of juggling of schedules. And in order to get Cinema Clash done this week, we had to make it work, and tonight's the night.
I appreciate your priorities.
So yeah, so we're drinking water because I think you're on childcare duty and I would fall asleep.
Well, we saw five films this week. I think I only saw three of them. You saw four of them. I think two of them are in Hebrew. So let's just kick it off with the biggest film of the week, which you didn't see. I saw Cars 3, and I did it in an interesting manner. The first Cars came out in 2006. I wasn't even in the country then, and I wasn't a kid anymore, so I didn't see it. And I didn't see Cars 2 either when it came out in 2011. So what I did this past weekend, I watched Cars and Cars 2 back-to-back, and then on Monday night, I saw Cars 3. And I could, so that, therefore, I can easily, seeing them all together, Cars 3 is the best film in that franchise. Hands down. Like, it's not even close for me. And I think a lot of people might be surprised that, oh, the first one's better. Because that's just nostalgia talking. They don't remember that the original Cars is a Doc Holliday, Michael J. Fox film ripoff, where Lightning McQueen, voiced by Owen Wilson, gets in trouble in small-town America and gets, like, held hostage. And nobody talks about Cars 2. Cars 3 doesn't even mention it. It's like it didn't happen. Cars 2 never happened in Cars 3 world. Cars 3 is a direct sequel to the first film. And they finally do what you want them to do. They race. There's a full season of racing on a racetrack, which, you know, in a movie called Cars about a race car, it's about time they finally get to that. And the major theme is veterans versus rookies. How do you know when it's time to hang it up? Do you go out on top? Do you go down? Do you leave after you faded away? All those things. Lightning McQueen's no longer the fresh-faced rook. He's a veteran, and he had these new, sleek, menacing-looking cars. The main one's voiced by Armie Hammer. I didn't realize it was Armie Hammer until later.
Wow. I like Armie Hammer.
And the big chunk in the middle is like just a big training montage. There's a girl car now. She's the trainer. Her name is Cruz Ramirez. She's voiced by Cristela Alonso. And they set it up where they could spin off Cars. If this makes enough money, they might do a spin off, and you'll see Cruz Ramirez, I think.
I like the name.
Have her own thing. What also makes Cars 3 work is that stupid tow truck, Mater, voiced by Larry the Cable Guy, which I think is the worst character ever, which is a major reason why Cars 2 didn't work, because he was the main character in that film. He's a very bit player here. Gets his little one-liners out of the way and move on.
But you need that for the nostalgia factor.
Just
people need their Mater. You can't just toss Mater out with the bathwater there, because there is an important factor with nostalgia. I haven't seen three. I did not see two, but I liked one, but it's been a long time. And so you're just in a minority of people that will actually have seen all three within a very short time frame to be able to compare them. So I don't think most people will be comparing one, two, and three quite as distinctively as you are. And so I think that the nostalgia factor still counts for people because the first one is always holds a special place in people's hearts because it was good and because it worked. So I'm glad that three is hearkening back to the better things about, you know, that made one such a good movie.
Well, don't be surprised when you see more people say Cars 3 is the best one of the trilogy, because they finally focus on what race cars are supposed to do, and I think people are going to appreciate that. This is also it's late. It's a movie too late. They should have done it Cars 2. It's an homage to Paul Newman. Paul Newman voiced old Doc Hudson in the first one, and they didn't mention him in Cars 2, and because he had already passed. And now there's a huge just chunk of this film that is reminiscing about Doc and how special Doc was, and it's really reminiscing about Paul Newman and the character he was. Finally, the score. What's his name? Randy Newman.
Short people.
Randy Newman. He plagiarized himself. I've heard that score before. I know exactly where you got it from, Randy. It's called Pleasantville. It's the best movie of like 1998. You stole it from yourself. I heard it, and it's like, you know why? Because it's my favorite score of like all time. If you've never heard that score, go on Spotify or wherever and just play the Pleasantville soundtrack, and you will be very surprised about how good it is. And then watch Cars 3 and be like, oh, I see what you did there, Randy.
Well, talk about that nostalgia factor. I didn't even realize that Randy Newman was still making these songs, you know, because he's been in this business of doing songs for animated movies now for decades. So
yeah,
it's impressive. Got a Friend. Didn't he do that one?
They took Pixar, took a chance. This is a first-time director, Brian Fee. He's only been a storyboard artist. He storyboarded the first two Cars films and WALL-E and did some work on Ratatouille, and they plucked him right out of the storyboard department and put him in as writer-director. But there's seven writers, which is ridiculous. I don't know why Cars 3 needs seven writers.
One for each car.
But I've been on a bad movie streak lately. I feel like I haven't liked anything. And then, all right, I got a kick out of Cars 3.
And then a good G movie comes along and makes Charlie happy.
I can't believe it's G, by the way. Cannot believe it's G.
Yeah, because...
Shocking.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. I think it'll probably do well because there haven't really been that many really good, decent movies out for the youngins lately. You've been seeing some pretty brutal ones, so...
Yeah, I guess the previous one before this was Captain Underpants.
Yeah, which you did not seem to like.
All right, our next film I did not see, but you saw... The Book of Henry.
I did, and I have been shocked today at the discourse that has been on, you know, a page that our fellow critics that we all monitor throughout the day. And it's amazing how divided people seem to be on this film. It is very rare for me to agree with our good friend Christian Hammaker.
Christian!
And yet he and I are in the minority of not hating this movie.
You and him do not like the same movies.
And I don't think that we don't hate this movie for the same reasons. I think we just both realize that the intense dislike that other people have for this movie is, to us, just seems a little over the top. I found the performances great. So basically, it's this movie that Naomi Watts stars as a single mom to these two boys, and the younger one is played by Jacob Tremblay, who everyone will remember from Room.
It's a famous name,
and he's still very good. So you just are like, wow, he has a really good follow-up to Room, and I think he's going to be definitely one to watch in the future. Mm. And then his brother, his older brother, Henry, is played by Jaden Lieberher. Is that how you pronounce his name?
That's the kid from St. Vincent.
It's the kid from St. Vincent. Remember the confirmation that very few people saw that I think it was
I think we were okay with that movie.
Yeah.
Clive
Owen, and he was very good in that. And Midnight Special, which was a weird movie, but he was very good in it. And so it's really all about Henry is this brilliant 11-year-old, and he handles the family's finances. He is essentially the man of the house, and his younger brother, Peter, just idolizes him. and they discover, so the first half of this movie, you're really meeting and learning about Henry and Peter and their mother. And then suddenly you find out that they see that a teenage girl next door is likely being sexually abused by her stepfather, who happens to be the police commissioner in
this small suburban town.
That
just took a big turn.
And Henry is determined. Henry has hatched this, he hatches this plan that's a very bizarre plan to basically to rescue the neighbor girl. And that's where this movie does take this turn. And I can't tell, there is a plot twist that I can't really go into. And there's this really cute neurosurgeon that pops up as, he's like a McDreamy.
As they are wont to do, those cute and, neurosurgeons.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, his role was a little odd. But Sarah Silverman is really wasted in this movie. She's good, but she's sort of this feisty friend and coworker of the mom. And she doesn't have much to do in this movie. Her character is not really fully developed. But in essence, you're just watching. Some people said when the film took this weird, preposterous turn that's just really hard to fathom and to accept, that's where it went a bit off the rails. And I agree with that. And so the people that are having who are taking issue with where this plot went in the second half, I get it. I totally get it. But I felt that the performances were all really solid. I like Naomi Watts. She seems to play this role of the embattled mom quite a bit. I remember like that the tension that she was going through in that movie about the tsunami where she's trying to hold her family together.
She was the embattled mom in Demolition. Remember Jake Gyllenhaal?
So yeah, so she's just got this, you know, it's like, man, she must just really like being put through the ringer as a mom. But the two boys really are so good. And I would put both of their performances right now at the top of my list for young actor performances for the WAFCO Awards at the end of the year, where we pick some youth performance.
You mean better than the girl from Raw?
Yes. Better
no
than
way.
The girl from Raw.
No way.
You are the only one who's going to nominate the girl from Raw. So, yeah, it's tough. It's a tough one. And I'm going to be really curious to see whether this movie gets any traction or whether the negative reactions are going to keep people away. It's a PG-13. It's a bit of a tearjerker, in parts of it. And, it reminded me in some ways of the movie Pay It Forward and how one person, one kid was struggling to make a difference.
Pay It Forward.
That's where, did you ever see that one?
Oh, I did.
Yeah, see, I like that kind of movie. And so people who like that kind of, who like the sap, because there is a bit of sap in the first half of this movie. Especially because the boys are so good. I thought it was okay. I didn't love it, and I understand why some people would not like it, but I don't understand the hate because I think that's undeserved. I liked it, so we'll find out.
I can't believe you and Christian.
I know.
Agree. This is the guy whose favorite film so far this year is Personal Shopper, which is like a personal affront to you.
I know his entire top 10 list. I was like, I don't like any of these, but it just goes to show you that that's sort of what it's all about. And sometimes these movies surprise you in different ways and resonate for different reasons among different people. So I think Book of Henry might be one of those ones that that people will just kind of catch on a movie and be like, catch on an airplane. And as a Netflix rental or something, and then just be satisfied with it for the most part.
All right, our next film is called The Hero, and it is kind of a one-man show. Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott has a one-man show, and it's by a writer-director named Brett Haley. And he did a very similar film with a female lead 2 years ago. It's called I'll See You in My Dreams. That was Blythe Danner. She had this big, you know, a very rare role for an older actress who's, you know, life after your husband dies. And this time, Sam Elliott's, this isn't life after someone's dead. It's just life after you're no longer.
You're told you're going to be dead.
Yeah, it's life after you're no longer famous.
Yeah, that too.
His character was this famous Western cowboy actor. And now he's faded away. Now he's doing barbecue commercials for the radio. And I really liked it. It was like
barbecue sauce.
Barbecue sauce. The perfect partner for your chicken. So it's really, you gotta like Sam Elliott to really, yes. to like this. He's told, he gets some bad medical news, and it's kind of like a wandering movie. He meanders around town. He hangs out with his drug supplier neighbor next door, played by Nick Offerman. He, hooks up in this odd December, May romance with Laura Prepon.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. All right, that just doesn't work. They're good together just talking about life, but when they're doing it, that doesn't work.
And you have his real-life wife playing his ex in this movie, and that must have been interesting.
So you didn't – I popped that trivia question to you last night. No one got it. Catherine Ross shows up. Who's Catherine Ross? She's Elaine from The Graduate, and she's also the girl from Butch Cassidy.
And she's also Sam Elliott's wife.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Yeah.
And Kristen Ritter pops up as his strange daughter. I always like Kristen Ritter. She's Jessica Jones on Netflix, and she's just fat. She's one of those actresses I just love to watch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Sam Elliott bumming around, I don't know, what was it, Malibu? And, you know, it's for my parents.
I have that written down. It has broader appeal than a lot of these small indies for the slightly more mature audiences. And so, without a doubt, if you like Sam Elliott, it's worth seeing because he commands the screen. He really does. And he's got this great voice. And they play on that. They play that up. And it's not really, the whole premise is really he's this aging actor confronting his mortality. And he's trying to mend fences and get back into that last big potential acting role. And I think I remember being cinematically really nicely shot. There were some really interesting choices for direction in this movie. And there are some really funny moments. It's billed as a comedy drama, which I think is wrong, because I do not see this
there's as no
a,
comedy in this movie.
There's no comedy in this movie, so I would not want anyone to be misled by seeing comedy next to anything related to this movie, because it's more designed to be a poignant message about facing death and sort of looking back at your life and trying to figure out what you want to do at the end of your life. Yeah, that May-December romance thing, it's weird. And then it's just he's kind of one of these guys sort of pining for the past, but he starts holding out some hope for the future, even though he doesn't have much of a future. And I love – there is a really funny sequence about he's being honored by one of these small, like, he's the Western actor hero, legend, Lifetime Achievement Award that he gets. And it was a clever little scene. And
there was a theme in this movie that confused me. I wonder if you can clear it up. He says, there's only one movie, and he's in a lot of movies. There's only one movie I've been really proud of, and it's like this movie called The Hero. Back from, it's like in the 60s or something. And it flashes back every now and then, like he becomes that character. And I don't understand. They never say why he's proud of it. They never say anything about that movie, why it was so good that he's remembered it so many years later. And sometimes he flashes back to the gunslinger character he played. What's the point?
I think the point was they needed a title for this movie. And they went, okay, so his biggest role ever will have been in this movie called The Hero. And he's trying to become the hero that he was decades before in this movie.
Is that it? He's trying to do the right thing now because he didn't do the right thing for so long.
And he acknowledges that he was, a deadbeat dad and not the best husband and that he had made a lot of mistakes. And, Nick Offerman is okay, but this whole becoming the potheads.
Like, he plays the same guy he did in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, the dad.
Yeah, so it's like he's just – so he plays as actor. Nick Offerman just shows up as this – the neighbor who's also a drug dealer who who actually co-starred with this guy in some 13-episode TV series many years back. And so that's that relationship. But I mean, this movie has moments. So it's not the best movie overall, but it definitely had some strong moments and it's thought provoking in a way. But in the end, it's Sam Elliott and you are watching it because he is just really a great presence and a great voice, and he's very interesting to watch. So if you like Sam Elliott, definitely, I think, check this one out.
Well, I just think the story lets him down a little bit. It's, if there was just a little bit more of a punch, a little bit more weight, then I'd really be behind this film. I'm still behind it, for him, and I'm okay with watching this actor deal with stuff.
Yeah.
But give it a little bit more weight, and you would really have gotten me.
That's true. It really misses an opportunity to have been, like, kick-ass.
It was actually indie. It was just like his other film, I'll See You in My Dreams. I didn't have any weight in it either. Yeah. It was just watching Blythe Danner meander around town.
Yeah, and it's good. It's just not, it doesn't fulfill its potential.
Our next film is our first film in Hebrew, but not our last film in Hebrew.
Cain, that would be yes in Hebrew.
And it's called Past Life. And so let me begin by saying it's a mystery. They set this up. They want to know what happened in the past. Two daughters are investigating their father, and they want to know, what did you do, father, during World War II that has made some people very upset? He was hiding under the floorboards in Poland in, like, a farm, and something happened, and no one really wants to tell him what happened. And it's a ruse. That's not the central mystery. The central mystery turns out to be something totally different. I felt hoodwinked and blindsided. In fact, the whole thing's based on a MASH episode. If you remember when Alan Alda got really heavy towards the end of MASH and the whole chicken on the bus thing.
But see, that's where you're wrong, though. This is based on a true story.
Oh, it's based on a memoir.
And so it's like this.
Absolutely.
This happened. So you can't say that
I'm pretty sure it's not as faithful as you think it is.
Maybe not, but the story, in essence, truly happened. And you had this woman who, you know, basically her life is upended when she discovers that there was something up with her father that she didn't know about. And these other people are angry and sort of taking it out a bit on her. And then she's got this other sister who's very liberal and is determined to investigate their father.
She must be the most liberal woman in Israel.
After all the other movies you saw. But they're trying to unravel this mystery about their father's actions while he was in hiding during World War II. And it's such a different take on we've seen so many of these Holocaust survivor story movies.
Yeah, Zookeeper's Wife springs to mind.
But this one, to me, it was refreshing in that, and I think it's the most mainstream accessible of the bunch of all these Israeli films that have been out lately.
Past Life's saving grace is its protagonist. They tell the story through Zefi, the daughter. She's a singer, she's a wannabe composer, she's in music school, and she's played by an actress named Joy Rieger, and she's the best thing about Past Life. She is so good.
She is very good.
It takes place in 77. She goes up to West Berlin, does her thing, performs, and this old woman comes up and just manhandles her and screams at her and says, "Your father is murderer," which just kicks off the mystery. And I get it. It's memoir. I'm sure that happened. But do you see why I'm a little bit upset here?
No.
You don't see
no.
That doesn't turn out to be the central mystery? That,
no.
She's not screaming at Zefi because she thinks...
No, it's the trigger. It's the trigger to setting off...
The ending was
the family.
Because
then it was about... It's a family drama. And that it goes from this from Zefi being confronted at one of her recitals by this woman in Berlin to then her kind of engaging with her family, her sister and her father and her mother to unravel the mystery of what happened.
It's so,
and so
melodramatic.
I know. That's what I liked about it.
The mother
it's a
keeps getting
drama.
Nosebleeds because, I can't talk. We shouldn't talk about the past. I'm getting a nosebleed.
I don't know what the
father's like,
really...
I wrote a diary and I'm going to write the diary again because I memorized the whole thing. And I'm going to sit very stoically in this chair and cry about
It's about fate and forgiveness and family dynamics. And I found it had a lot of nuances that I think you've missed. Nothing's black and white. It's gray on purpose in several areas.
It's too gray.
I think, the woman who plays her sister Nana is really, she's feisty and she is dealing with her own.
She believes she is stricken with cancer because of her father's sins.
Yeah, so it's, but their relationship.
And in an action thriller portion where they're searching for this diary because she's 19 minutes away from death. And all of a sudden, she gets better when they find the diary.
No, see,
like,
I
really?
Think,
really? You're going to ratchet up the pace
for
that?
Once again, I think this is, and it's in English, German, Polish, and Hebrew. So, you know, if you know any of those, you might be able to enjoy this movie. But I think you missed it. I think you missed the point.
Past life is not terrible.
It's
right?
Good.
I do not hate it. Just because I'm upset about it because it could have been better. That I did not like the bamboozle at the end. I just didn't like that part.
But I don't think it was a bamboozle.
I can't believe you're not saying that. No. They pull the rug out from under you, and it's a completely different mystery. In fact, something that happened way later, just something else, which is why that woman's so upset. And that threw me. I didn't like that part.
Yeah.
But once again, Zeffy, Joy Rieger, really good. In fact, I'm going to look at to see how old she is to see if she's eligible for that young actress. I don't know if she's...
Yeah, she looks a little older, like maybe she's early 20s.
I think the cutoff's 20 years. The cutoff's 20 years old. She is really good.
She is.
The director who's adapting this memoir, Avi Nesher, he did an admirable job portraying 1977. There's John Travolta posters.
Saturday Night Fever's up there. The Camp David Peace Accord stuff is going on.
It ends
in the
with
background.
Anwar Sadat on TV.
Yeah.
So it's time appropriate.
It is.
It's cheating. It cheats.
See, I don't think it cheated at all. I think it embraced the time frame. I see, what you call cheating, I think, is what made it a decent movie.
You didn't feel wishy-washy at the end, like no one's in the same room and she's off there crying, and it just...
No, I think if it had gone any other way, you would have been complaining about, oh, that was too neat. You know, tied up too neatly in the end, because it could have gone a slightly different way.
And you weren't upset at the find the diary right now that's been sitting in this office for 40 years so my,
well, I'm sure
my sister doesn't die.
I suspect there was some creative license taken in terms of the time frame and how quickly some of these things happen, and trying to add some tension and time sensitivity. So I don't think not every scene was great, but I think overall, it's a really different, interesting, unique take on a Holocaust survivor story. And it's a really interesting tale that people really, I'd never heard about. And it's fascinating. And so I just think that it's a really good movie. I think the, it's amazing because we'll talk about a third, Israeli film, but, we talked about The Wedding Plan, which you also didn't get.
Past Life is far superior to The Wedding Plan.
So,
do you agree with that, or are you gonna disagree with that?
Better.
Of course, I got The Wedding Plan.
I wouldn't say far superior. I think Past Life is better. It's different, though. It's more of a family drama, and whereas Wedding Plan was more of a quirky dramedy.
Don't call it a comedy.
Dramedy.
Don't do it.
but I am impressed with the caliber of the Israeli films coming out. It's, you know, we've seen sort of one after another now, but I think there's a lot out there for, I would say, the Jewish arty crowd. There's plenty for them to go see. And
well, we live in Bethesda.
One of them.
I mean, this is
this
is the holy grail for the Jewish arty crowd.
And this is another one that that I think they that they would enjoy.
All right, our second film in I didn't see it, but our second film in Hebrew this week apparently has broken the box office in Israel and had people around the block for that. It was nominated for multiple Israeli Oscars.
Five Israeli Academy Award nominations.
So tell us about The Women's Balcony.
So The Women's Balcony is another one similar to what Wedding Plan was. It sort of takes place in this devout Orthodox community. So even though I think you might like Women's Balcony slightly, you know, more than Wedding Plan, you might not like it because it's another one that has really strong women who are sort of trying to live within this community and the balancing the traditions and values of the past with, you know, in the face of modern extremism and trying to push back a bit on traditionalists. And so female power movie, really good women performances in that. Good performances all around. But essentially what happens is there's a women's balcony at the synagogue in Jerusalem. And so, you know, the women are separated from the men in these locations. So the women have their balcony, and it's sort of their own little community on this balcony. And they're watching a bar mitzvah, and the balcony collapses, and the rabbi's wife is the only one who's really hurt. So she ends up like in a coma. The rabbi's kind of devastated and kind of checks out for a while. And in the meantime, the members of the synagogue are trying to preserve the synagogue and figure out how they can rebuild. But they need enough men to hold their daily prayers and things like that in the synagogue. And this charismatic young rabbi happens along on the street.
As they do.
As they tend
kinda
to
like
do.
Kind of like the neurosurgeon in the
yes,
Book of Henry.
As exactly, they do. As they tend to do. And he steps in, and at first he seems like this savior, you know, this godsend for this community. But his motives start to become a bit suspect because he's sort of quietly undermining the relationships, I think, between the men and the women and between the women themselves. He causes a bit of a gender rift. He's very fundamentalist. And so these women have gotten together and they want to they've raised money to fix the balcony, but the rabbi wants to divert those funds to purchase like a new Torah scroll. And so it sort of turns into this battle between interpretation of Jewish law and commentary and the women trying to say, look, we raised this money, we want our balcony, and trying to get the men to understand where they're coming from and to make them see that this new charismatic rabbi guy is not necessarily the best person for their synagogue and where they are at in the spectrum of change and social action in this film. And so it's I actually think the ending of Women's Balcony was way more satisfying to me than the ending of Wedding Plan.
It's not hard to beat the ending
exactly,
of Wedding Plan.
But it really, I almost, the more I thought about it, they're similar but different enough that if you like one, you probably like the other. And but I do think that that the Women's Balcony just has a more satisfying ending that isn't as what you would call divisive, because you did not like the ending at all. But there was a reason for the choices that were made at the end of the Wedding Plan, and there's a reason for the things that that culminate in the ending for Women's Balcony. But I do think that if having to make the choice, I would say Past Life probably the strongest, Women's Balcony second, with Wedding Plan just behind it.
Yeah, it is. I can go for like 2 years and not see an Israeli film make the scene here, and all of a sudden back to back to back.
Yeah, and it's because also there was the Jewish Film Festival just went on, and so a lot of these were shown there, and so they must. I think Israeli cinema just had a really good year.
I think the last one I saw was actually nominated for a Golden Globe like 2 years ago. Get the Trial of Vivian N. Zalim. I think that's the last one I saw. That seems like a while ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely a lot out there for the Jewish arty folks.
All right. Well, to wrap up, Hannah is still playing hooky tonight, even though she's supposed to be a documentary right now.
Oh, wait. But I do want to mention, because Rough Night
oh, yeah.
is another...
We did not see Rough Night.
We did not see Rough Night. So, because we were at the our gala at the museum last night.
Staying up way too late.
So we had no choice but to miss the screening of Rough Night. And so I sent my friend Maggie Mazzetti, who's a newlywed, because I figured who better than a newlywed to go and see this this raucous, raunchy comedy about an epic bachelorette weekend. And so her take on it, just so we – it's meant – looks like it's meant to be like a Bridesmaids meets Hangover kind of movie. She said it doesn't rise to the level of either of those, but it had some good stuff with SNL's Kate McKinnon and Broad City's Alana Glazer. It should have been better given the talent that was involved. She said, not as good as Bridesmaids. Doesn't suck, but not great.
Doesn't suck.
That's right.
Well said, Maggie. Doesn't
well, that was
suck.
Me. I was kind of that was my interpretation.
It's like, I know Maggie, and she wouldn't say the
no.
S word. She's too pure.
That's
for
right. That.
That
was my interpretation.
Defend your honor there,
of
Maggie.
Maggie's criticism on it. So yeah, she wrote a little review as a guest chick for Chick Flicks this week, in order to save us from having to divide and conquer with the AFI docs.
Well, there you go, Maggie. Thank you very much.
Yes.
All right, quick recap. Cars 3, which will probably win the weekend. I don't think it'll lose to Wonder Woman. Mummy, or I don't think Wonder Woman will
win. By the way, I did win the bet on, handily, on Wonder Woman.
Handily.
Easily. You're going to owe me like a case of
wine.
We
didn't bet wine on that one.
No, we did. You need to go back and
that's
listen.
That's fine. I was going to buy it anyway.
There was a bet. You need to go back and
listen. I think I just
listen.
Made a bet because I wanted to bet.
No, but there was a wager
involved. The second weekend of Wonder Woman crushed.
Crushed.
The stink bomb that turned out to be Tom Cruise in The Mummy.
Which apparently, though, is doing phenomenally internationally.
Because everyone still loves Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Cars 3, best one of the franchise. Not disappointed at all.
I'll take your word for that one.
Book of Henry.
Book of Henry, well, boy, it'll be interesting. Just, I don't think it'll do very well because of the critics just not getting behind it. But I would say if you like, Jacob Tremblay was amazing in Room. I think Jaden Lieberher is great, and Naomi Watts is good if you're looking for just an emotional family drama that the first half is really good, second half not so much, then it's worth checking out for the performances.
You know, I meant to mention this. It's directed by Colin Trevorrow. He, the same guy did Jurassic World.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The next 2019 installment of Star Wars, Episode 9.
I don't get why some people hate it as much as they do, but what can you do?
All right, The Hero, Sam Elliott walking around town. You can only see it if you're 70 plus.
No, that's not fair. If you like Sam Elliott, if you've ever seen Sam Elliott, if you know who Sam Elliott is, and you just want to walk around for the next 2 weeks going, barbecue sauce,
the perfect partner for your chicken,
then it's worth seeing.
Past life, it's not as bad as I made it sound. Like, I did like
you
it.
You are wrong.
Oh, I did like past life. I just got too passionate about it because it could have been very good. It was just good.
Okay. That's better than my original take that you just did not like it at all, which is what I was drawing from you. So I think Past Life is strong. I liked it. I thought it was more towards very good than just good.
And Women's Balcony.
And Women's Balcony also very good. And if you like the Israeli films that have been coming out lately, this is another one to add to the mix, but also it can easily be a rental.
All right, folks, thank you very much for listening to the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend at RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.